The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Airing of Grievances. I'm your host, Jay. I'm here with my co-host, Micah.
Hey.
All right, we're back with a new episode. This episode is entitled The Cheever Letters. This one basically picks up where the last episode left off, which finds Susan's father's cabin has been burned to the ground, and George is meeting Susan's parents for the first time. What did you think about this episode?
I enjoyed the episode. I think the episode got better as the episode went on. Like, in the beginning, it was kind of slow. But some of the jokes from the beginning paid off in the end, and they paid off big time.
Yes, I would say so.
Yeah, yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I enjoyed this. Look, the ending to me is easily one of the best. Like, yeah. it absolutely nails it. I love Susan's parents. They are so fucked up, and Susan's mom is hilariously drunk all the time. But I love them as recurring characters. They're some of my favorites. Yeah. All in all, this is a pretty great episode.
Yeah. Yeah. So it starts off, George isn't really looking forward to meeting Susan's parents because she wants him to go with her to, tell her father that the cabin was burned down by Kramer, and the Cuban cigars. And Jerry's like, oh, well, you know, just don't you find it ironic that Susan gave you her father's cigars that you gave to Kramer that Kramer ultimately ended up using to burn down the cabin? Isn't that ironic?
It's hilarious.
It's hilarious, guy. Like, no, the hell out of my face. Jerry's a dick.
No, he's a total asshole. He knows that situation is going to suck for his friend, so he just makes fun of him about it, which I can totally understand. Because that's exactly what I would do.
So, meanwhile, Jerry and George are finally getting ready to start, you know, trying to write a script for the pilot. And they do little kids who, not even little kids, just like a bunch of people who are just kind of lazy. And they want to get started, right? But they can't really find the je ne sais quoi to actually get it done.
Yeah, it's funny. All they do is they procrastinate. If they can like figure out, oh, you want a drink of water? Oh, you don't have the right pens? Oh, is this where you sit? You know, like all this shit. They come up with so many things to not work. I have definitely done that. And I'm working on a big project, which you know about, right now, and today I'm at home working on this all day, and I'm just, all I can do is like, have I eaten yet? Should I go through this? because it's so much work to do. Like, I can't imagine getting started.
Like, I do it for things. I do it for like work and stuff like that sometimes, but I also do it for things that I enjoy. Like when I used to draw like a lot. And now, like, I want to draw something, right? But I just can't seem to sit my ass down and get started. I know that once I get started, and if I get started quickly, then I'm good and I'll want to finish it. But it's just getting started, man. Like, I can't.
Right. And that's how I'm with homework and shit like that. I'm like, I just got to get over the hump, man. Like, I just got to get over that first, writing that first paragraph when I have to write movie reviews and stuff like that. I just got to get over that first paragraph, and then it's all downhill and it's easy. But
yeah,
it's just fucking getting started.
Yeah. So one of the ways they procrastinate is Jerry calls Elaine and at her job. And when Jerry calls, Elaine's secretary picks up the phone, and the secretary starts, you know, chit-chatting, and he's like, oh, God, yeah, she always wants to talk my ear off. And he's like, oh, I'm at a payphone. I gotta, you know, just put me through to Elaine. And then he tells Elaine, hey, you know, is there any way I can just call you directly? Because, you know, your secretary always talks my ear off. First of all, I've had that happen. And yeah, you know me. I don't like talking on the phone, man. Like,
right. Call with, like, what you got and then get the fuck off.
Right, right. And whatever it is could probably be sent in a text message anyway.
That is correct.
So I don't like making small talk. I don't see the point of it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we're all aware of the weather. Right. Like, I don't need you to point it out.
Get to it.
I am fully aware that it is nice outside. I don't
like
need
I was
you.
There.
It's right. Exactly. So Elaine, after she gets off the phone with Jerry, immediately goes to her secretary, Sandra, and says, hey, when my friends call, could you not, you know, be on the phone with them long? And then, of course, Sandra puts two and two together because it's like,
she's not an idiot.
Right. She's not a moron, for God's sakes. And Elaine is trying to backpedal, and Sandra, much like a woman ruled by her emotions, just ups and quits.
Yeah, she's ridiculous. She's like, oh, did Jerry say that? I'm sorry. I can't work for you. Like, what? That's it. Like, done and done.
Jesus Christ.
That shit was hilarious.
So we cut back to Jerry's apartment where Kramer comes in and asks George, hey, you think you could get me some more of those Cuban cigars? And George is like, get the fuck out of my face. You burned the guy's cabin down with those cigars. And Kramer's like, well, what's one thing got to do with the other?
Like, the balls on Kramer. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, I see why you hate the character.
Yeah, man.
Like, he's obnoxious.
I really do, man. I really do. Oh, Jesus Christ. Like, I know people like that, man. You
really?
Know? Like, just no shame. Like, have you no shame?
Yeah, look, I know we're not supposed to shame people anymore. That's not a thing. We're just supposed to give them participation trophies and tell them that they're doing great by existing. Oh no, you're wonderful. You're a special, unique fucking snowflake. Nope. I just don't believe in that. Oh, let's cheer a person who just ate themselves to that weight. Good. That's really hard to do. So yeah, it's on the same equivalency as someone who like tries hard. Okay.
Right.
Shit, fucking man. Dude. Tell you, look, if there's anything you will ever learn about me from listening to any of these shows, I hate fat logic, dude. I fucking hate it. Don't celebrate people for doing mundane, mediocre shit. I don't like the everyone is beautiful shit. No, they're not. Antonin Scalia is not a beautiful person. Like, he wasn't. Like, stop saying shit like that.
Exactly.
If everyone is beautiful, then beautiful doesn't mean anything. It just doesn't. It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
No one celebrates people for breathing. You know why? Because everyone does it. It's not a special thing. Congratulations. So anyway, the whole idea of someone who doesn't have any shame drives me crazy. It's like you're supposed to have some shame. That's how you like get out of bed in the morning. You know, like, not that you should like, oh, I feel terrible, but like, that's why you don't walk outside with your balls hanging out. Like, because you have some level of shame. Like, you know what? Maybe I should cover up because maybe somebody doesn't want to see that shit. Like, just calm down. Like, it's okay. I think it's perfectly healthy to feel a little bit of shame. Not let it guide your life, but feel a little bit that you're not the greatest fucking person in the world.
Right. Come on,
and
man.
If you suffer from that issue where you do think that, come sit down with me. I'm sure I could figure out some things. I hate that shit, dude. I don't understand our society, what we've become, that we like, you shouldn't be mean to people, but you also shouldn't think that every little thing you do deserves a fucking award or a medal or somehow any level of recognition. Like, do something. When you do things, then you should get accomplishments or compliments. But don't fucking sit on your ass and do nothing. Feel some shame for that shit.
Right. I'll take it to the next level. I don't care what you think. I know like the internet is a wonderful thing, but I don't need any little thought that pops into your head to be out there. Have a little bit of shame in your beliefs.
I agree with that. Like, there are certain things that I believe that I won't even say. Like, I just, because this is for me.
Right.
Like, it's for me. Now, ironically, we run a podcast network where all we do is give our opinions. But, like, there are certain things that I just don't talk about. Like, they're just, right. They're few and far between, but there's just certain things I just don't talk about. Like, my opinion does not matter on every living, breathing thing. You know, it's like, it's the equivalent of going and seeing a movie trailer on a website, and one of the comments is, I don't know about this. Then why did you comment? Like, shouldn't you only comment, like, if you have a question or you have a definitive opinion on something? Like, I feel like, isn't that the requirement? Like, this looks good.
It's my opinion.
Like, like, this looks good. This looks bad. Or, hey, what is this? Like, those are the only three things that you should say. I don't know about this. I don't know how I feel about this. So, okay. The fuck do I care? What kind of fucking comment is that? Like, I will never understand that comment. I will never understand it. I don't know how I feel about this. All right. Take the bread out of the oven.
Thanks for sharing.
What the fuck? Or, I don't care about this. Well, clearly you do because you wrote it. God damn it. Like, fuck you, internet. Like, again, people, you got to look at everything I say and think. You need to hear all of it. Like, no, we really don't. So
Kramer wants some more cigars because he was using them to bribe his way into the Westchester Country Club golf course. Because he, you know, apparently it is a beautiful, beautiful golf course.
Yes.
Apparently. I don't know.
You ever play golf?
Not yet. The folks at my job, they're like, hey, you play golf? I was like, no, but, you know, I can come out there. And he was like, oh, good. None of us know how to play either. You'll be perfect.
No.
So, I remember this old black dude once told me at when I was working at the wastewater treatment plant. He said, you have to learn how to play golf because that's a white man's game and white men do business deals on the golf course. And if you ever want to be not as good as them, but that's how he said it. It's not how he meant it.
Yeah, I know totally what you mean.
But he's like, you got to learn how to play golf, and you got to learn how to play golf, but not be like dominant in it.
Yeah. Like, here's the thing. He is 100% correct. He's 100% correct.
Yeah.
Like, my parents also taught me that same thing. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
I've played golf. I'm not very good at it. I would argue I'm pretty bad at it. I'm actually horrible. But that being said, I've learned. I mean, I have my own golf clubs. You know, it's something that I've wanted to take up and learn how to play better for that exact reason.
Yeah.
Like, and also as a sport, it's an interesting sport because it's probably the most frustrating sport. Like, it is. Like, nobody, you're not going to go out with your friends and start playing golf, and then one of your friends is going to be immediately better than you. Like, that's just not a thing. So, yeah, it's a good thing from that perspective. But I've played a couple times. I'm terrible. But, yeah, absolutely. It is something. Look, every black person should know how to play golf. Everyone. That should be, like we know how to fry chicken. That should be one of the other things.
Isn't that kind of a shame, though?
Yes. That
we have to learn how to play this game that you legitimately might not want to know how to play or care enough about to play. But
right.
if you want to be in there, you know, you gotta. Yeah, I just think it's sad, man.
You know, no, you're 100% right. It is sad, but at the same time, it's I guess to me, it's one of those things of as a business owner, I don't necessarily even see it as a, like, I don't necessarily see it as like a white man's game kind of thing. Not anymore so much. Now that Tiger Woods beats the brakes off of white people in that game all the time. But right. I just see it as a business thing. And it is, it's a part of being a business owner. And if I want to talk contracts and shit like that, you better be able to be able to play on whatever field that is that those business transactions happen. Like, money gets made. I mean, that guy's right. Money gets made on, you know, not in boardrooms all the time. Sometimes it's with a fucking handshake, you know, smoking a cigar on a golf course. A lot of the times. So,
yeah.
Unless you want to be a fucking caddy, you better learn to get out there and do something. Hey, also, like, just like driving balls is kind of fun. Like, that's just, that's like a good stress reliever, I think.
That's what I hear. I live in Aspen Hill near Silver Spring in Bethesda, and there ain't nothing but a bunch of driving ranges all over the place.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah, man.
We should go when the weather isn't horrible. Like, we should go. It's actually fun. It's fun.
All right. I'm thinking of like two places off the top of my head, like that we could go to.
All right. That sounds cool. And that could be like, that's like, hey, what did you and Micah do this weekend when you hung out? We went to the golf course. You fucking bougie sons of bitch. Terrence, listening to this episode right now, very angry. Both of us. But yeah, it's actually a lot of fun. And you get to drink. You don't drink, but...
Oh, great.
Yeah, no, people get fucking fucked up playing golf, man. You get, you know, between the front nine and the back nine, people get fucking lit. Yeah, they're out there drinking beers all goddamn day. It's quite hilarious. All right,
well,
back to the show.
Kramer wants to do that shit, and he wants to do it at Westchester. George doesn't have any cigars, so Kramer immediately leaves to go find some. Cut to that night, George and Susan are at their parents, and they just have a series of just like weird conversations. Like, this episode is where the Ross family really, really gets to shine.
Dude, they're so good.
Yeah, they're really good, man. And they have a bunch of awkward conversations, but eventually Susan and George tell her father that the cabin has been burned down.
I like that all the build up to them telling was like him talking, the father talking about the cabin. He's like, you know, my father built that cabin. He told me his last dying words were, cherish the cabin. Like, it's like just making it harder and harder for them to tell him. That shit was so funny to me.
And the way that they actually do it, it's like, well, daddy, the captain is a little, and then George, burned. Burned.
He's like, burned? Like, burned down to the ground. Was there anything found? Meanwhile, Susan's mother is a lush. She is just a drunk and just laughing the entire time. The shit is so funny. I love her character. She is such a fool. Would you have gone with Susan to tell him about the cabin? I'd have been like, I'm busy. Can't do it.
Well, they're a couple now, officially, right? Like, this isn't just like a couple of dates here and there. Like,
right.
He's trying to do something. So, yeah, you got to kind of, and I wouldn't put it past her to be like, look, you know, your dumb friend who you told we were going here, your dumb friend, you're ultimately responsible for this.
Yeah, I mean, he is.
Right. So, yeah, you coming.
Then they cut to Jerry with Susan's Elaine's coworker or secretary, and them hooking up.
So Elaine asked Jerry to apologize to Sandra to keep her from quitting. And Jerry does, and over the phone, and Sandra asks him out for a date later that night. And he's like, oh, now I got to go on a date.
I mean, she's not a bad-looking woman, dude. Like,
no, she wasn't a bad-looking woman.
I mean, she's like, you know, this is like the 90s or what have you. But she, like, in the 90s, she could have gotten it. She's a tall, blonde woman. I'm not really into blondes, but, yeah.
I don't like blondes either.
I didn't know it, man. I didn't know it. I'm more of a brunette guy.
It's because we're black, man.
Well, for, yeah, I mean, look, for women, like white women, brunettes. All day, every day, man. That fucking jet black hair is some. Look, jet black hair with some fucking glasses, that's game over for me. All right, like it just is, man. That just is. Like black women, natural hair all day. Like I love it, love it, love it. But yeah, if you're talking white women, I'm a brunette fan. Like they look smarter to me. Like they just do. And I know that's not a fair stereotype, but it is what it is.
I mean, look, stereotypes exist for a reason, man.
Yeah, they do.
Like if there weren't enough examples around, then there wouldn't be a stereotype.
Right. Like, it is what it is. It is what it is. Black people like chicken. We fucking do. And a lot of us like watermelon. We do. That's true. I don't personally, but yeah, that's just me.
My wife loves watermelon, right? She's like, how do you not like watermelon? And then I remind her that she doesn't like potato salad.
What the fuck, dude?
Exactly.
Look, if I had to give up one of those things, I would easily give up watermelon forever over giving up
potato salad. You damn right.
Dude, potato salad's amazing.
The hell out of here. You don't like potato
salad. She doesn't like potato salad?
Nope.
Oh, I keep meaning to give her a hard time about that the next time I see her. Like, that's crazy. And she's like a big macaroni and cheese person like me.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to eat hot macaroni and cheese? You're not going to have some potato salad on the side?
Nope.
I mean, in fairness, when you think about what potato salad is, it's rather disgusting.
I mean, it's like, potatoes, mayonnaise. Yeah. But you know what? She eats everything. She eats all the components of a potato salad. Just put them together, and it's like, nope.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's very weird.
Yeah, but like I like to not think about what potato salad really is because it's like that's pretty gross. like, dude, that's just potatoes in mayo. that's fucking nasty. But together with like some seasoning or whatever, that shit is awesome, man. Like,
shit is amazing.
Yeah, come on, man.
So Jerry and Sandra return to his apartment, but Sandra storms off after they had been talking dirty and. Jerry goes a little too far. The next day at the diner, Jerry tells George that you know about the date, and George proceeds to do one of the funniest visual gags, Jerry whispers what Sandra said to him to George. And George is into it, and all of a sudden he's holding a ketchup bottle, and all of a sudden ketchup squirts out of the bottle.
That shit is fuck. That's still one of the funniest fucking moments, dude.
I must be a child, man. But like dick humor like that it always makes me laugh.
It's a funny gag. Like it's a funny gag, especially if you don't see it coming. You know, it's just like oh shit. This shit was just well timed. It's just absolutely perfect. What I also enjoy about that scene is, like, he keeps telling him stuff, and like George is like throwing a napkin, and he's like, "Oh, flag on the play." Like, all right, he's like, there's a moment where you can actually see he's sweating. Like, shit is just funny. Like, it's just good physical comedy.
So then George says, "Well, what did you say?" And Jerry says, "You know, all right. So we were talking about her panties." And she says something about her panties, and then I say, "You mean the panties your mother laid out for you?"
Dude, not cool, man. Not fucking cool. Like, it is, that is an unacceptable, like, don't mention people's mothers, dude, around
that
sex.
That is so weird, man.
Yeah.
Because on a number of different levels. One, you got someone's mom in the picture now, right? And then two, and more importantly, your parents lay your clothes out for you when you're a child.
Yeah, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, okay, here's a funny little story. Like, my wife and I, this is a number of years ago. Like, my wife and I are like about to like hook up or whatever, and we're married at this time. And my mom had called me like 10 minutes beforehand, and I just didn't pick up the phone. I was like, I'll just call it back later. Like, this is obviously more important.
Right.
And so, like, we're, you know, we're like getting ready to like
you know, get hot and heavy or whatever. And she says, like, do you want to call your mom back? I'm like, stop talking about my mother. Like, like, no, I don't. So, like, just stop. What are you doing? Don't mention my, like, don't mention my mother at all, at all, at all. Like, no, gross, awful. Yeah, I was just like, shut up.
Oh, that's so funny.
I was just like, no, what are you doing? What are you doing? But yeah, I know that that's prime to get turned off. Like, if a woman said something similar to you, like, oh, are those your boxers that your mom laid out for you? Is that a turn off or no?
That is instant flaccid is what that is.
Yeah. See, that's the same for me. I'm like, no.
Like, all right, we're done here. Like, there's no recovering from this. Nah, man. Mm-mm. That's just really bizarre and, you know, pedophilic. So this leads to Sandra storming out, obviously, because, you know, she's normal.
Yeah, she has no desire for that shit.
Back at the apartment, George and Jerry are, we see George and Jerry doze off after failing to write any more of their script. Elaine comes in and says, hey, you know, thanks, Jerry, for getting Sandra back to work. But Jerry, embarrassed that, you know, he said something that a pedophile would say, tells Elaine that she should just go ahead and relocate her as quickly as she can. And
he's not trying to get that fucking news out there.
Right. And he's happy that Sandra didn't mention anything. So we cut to Kramer, who goes to like the Cuban embassy.
Right.
Looking to buy some cigars.
Like, and, who the hell does that?
Right.
Again, no shame.
No shame. And he goes to the chief diplomat and he's like, hey, you know, I'm looking for some Cubans. And the diplomat is like, hey, Holmes, you know, these aren't legal here, right? He's like, well, maybe we can work something out. And then Eddie Guerrero over there says, I like that jacket.
Of course.
We cut to...
Look, and I like cigars, but this is insane.
You wouldn't give up your jacket for a Cuban? Have you ever had a Cuban cigar?
A real Cuban? No, I've never had one. Where would I even get one?
Cuba? I don't know. You all are worldly.
Nah, not that. I would love to go to Cuba, but we're not that worldly yet. Donate to the show. Yeah. No, I've never had an actual Cuban cigar, but I think it'd be pretty cool to have one. I certainly wouldn't be against having one.
What's the big deal about a Cuban cigar?
They're just really good at making cigars. Like, that's just the thing. And then when they became illegal because of the embargo, they just, you know, it just heightened the mystery around them. That's all. But apparently the Cubans are really, really good at cigars.
Huh.
And also, I mean, like, Castro and, you know, and smoking cigars was, you know, it's just a classic. It's just sort of a classic thing.
Yeah.
But I absolutely, when that embargo fully gets lifted, I mean, it's sort of like partially lifted, and you can get Cubans, you can guarantee they will absolutely be bringing Cubans to the U.S. Without a doubt.
So we cut to Jerry and George. They George has to go to Susan's house to return her sunglasses. So they go in and we meet more of the Rosses. We meet Mr. Ross's sister, and what was his nephew?
Yeah, it was Susan's brother.
Susan's brother.
Who's a prick?
Yeah, he's a bit of a dick. The while they're up there, a doorman delivers her family a metal box from the insurance company, saying that this was the only thing that survived. And Susan opens it and starts reading, and there are letters inside, and Susan starts reading them. And the letters are about a love affair between Susan's father and novelist John Cheever.
What a random person to assign this to. Do you know why they picked him? I have no clue.
I don't even see that John Cheever. Well, he was never married, but I mean, maybe there was speculation that he was gay.
So this is from IMDb. George's girlfriend, Susan, discovers that her father had once had an affair with John Cheever. John W. Cheever was a real novelist and short story writer who was most famous for chronicling mid-century American suburban Inuit. After Cheever's death, his daughter, also named Susan, wrote a memoir revealing that Cheever was serially unfaithful to her mother while with both male and female lovers. This was additionally confirmed when his journals were also published posthumously. Maybe they just said, hey, we got a character named Susan. Someone just happened to know that little trivia nugget about John Cheever.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's just have this be a thing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past them to just do something off the wall like that.
I mean, who's going to get mad at them? He's dead.
Right.
That's just funny.
So Susan is reading these things aloud, and her father enters the room and snatches the box. And he describes John Cheever as the most wonderful person he's ever known. It says that he loved him deeply in a way that you wouldn't understand. Meanwhile, Jerry and George are just standing there like, oh, you got to get the old dusty trail.
Yeah, dude, they're like, we got to get the fuck out of here yesterday.
Oh, man. Have you ever been in a situation like that where, like, some family shit is about to, is blowing up and you know, you're just kind of there?
Specifically, I can't think of anything, but I'm sure that I have been. I mean, I've certainly been there when those kind of things go down between, you know, just certain people, where you're just like, this is so, I feel so embarrassed for somebody here. I have to go. I was in this class, this is a couple weeks ago, and there was a guy in the class, like imagine you're standing in front of a class of people of like maybe 35, 40 people. And you're standing up in the front like a teacher. In the back left corner, the very back left corner, is this guy. And two seats to this kid's left is me. So I'm like pretty close to the back. And so this guy is like this really kind of obnoxious guy. And he's like, he would like clap really loud and like make comments that were just like weird. And like, he was just a weird kid, right? And so he had done that, like this class was a weekend class, and he had done that the day before, and then he started to do it during this class that I was in. And so I'm just like, fuck. Like when I came in, I was like, fuck, I gotta sit next to this guy, god damn it. And so he made one of these obnoxious remarks. And this girl on the other side of the class, she raises her hand, and she's like, excuse me, to the guy. And she's like, what's your name? And he was like, oh, my name's like Ralph. She was like, hey, Ralph, you know, you've been really obnoxious over the last 2 days with like making these jokes that aren't really helping everybody. No one is here to see you. We're here to listen to the professor's talk. Could you please stop? Thank you very much. Dude, and I'm sitting like, and she said it exactly like that. And it was just like, oh no, I literally had my cup of coffee in my hand. I just stared at the floor and just drank it. I was like, oh, like it was embarrassing, dude. I wanted to get up and leave so bad. It was awful. It was one of the funniest things I've ever experienced, though. I was like, take it easy, Jesus Christ. Like she and she wasn't like super mean about it. She just said that shit matter of fact. It was just like that. Like, it is what it is.
Oh, that's funny, man. Yeah. I love seeing shit like that.
Have you ever dealt with that?
Not off the top of my head. Like you said, I'd have to go back. I've been in situations where I'm like, we got to get the fuck out of here because these people are arguing, and most people like
couples who argue in front of everybody.
Yeah,
that is the worst. That is the
worst. Yeah, man. Like, I remember going out on a date. This was a long time ago. This was This was a long time ago. I remember going out on a date with, it was a double date. And this couple, they were just, I don't know how they were together or why they were together. Because it was just like, it was like snark-a-thon. You know what I mean?
Really?
Like, and they would just be snarky to each other. And I don't understand why you're together. Like, what are you doing?
Like, my wife and I, we like rib on each other, but like, we're pretty like, I don't think we're like that. Like, that sounds horrible to me.
Yeah, no. It's not like the dynamic that you two have. It's more, it's kind of mean-spirited.
Yeah,
like, it comes like from a bitter place, man.
Right, yeah, that does not feel good to be around that.
And we're at dinner. Yeah. Like, we're at dinner, so there's nothing else that you can occupy your time with.
Right, you can't just be like, oh, look at my phone, because that's rude, right?
Right.
How many times did you guys hang out with them?
Oh, just that one time. Yeah. Then I was like, look, you can hang out with so-and-so all you want. Nope.
No,
I'm not doing it.
Yeah, that's too uncomfortable, man. It's too uncomfortable. No, thank you.
Oh, and then there was this other time. Oh, my goodness. All right. There was this other time where me and my wife were going out. We went out on a double date with what's that bitch's name? The woman that I shouldn't be calling her a bitch, but she's a bitch. The woman that thought that my wife was copying her.
Oh, right.
About her engagement ring. Like, this was before then, obviously. But we would go out. We didn't go out. We had them over. And we very rarely host, right? But we had them over because she used to be like, you know, my wife's, you know, one of her besties, right?
Right.
And her boyfriend at the time was a nice guy, but he was just an arrogant asshole.
Really?
Yeah, man. And it's like the girl is pretty, but she's got like self-esteem issues a little bit when it comes to ultimately when it comes to him. Like, he's got that like mind control thing that dudes have over women sometimes for some strange reason.
Grow a spine.
Or don't, you know, stop trying to be manipulative. Dudes.
Oh, well, yes, that's also an option you have. Don't be a dick.
But yeah, like he would just make these like snide comments, smart ass comments, or you know, just expect certain things. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Like the ladies had made us dinner, and you know, like I said, it was here, and the ladies had made us dinner, and I'm getting ready to, you know, take my plate to the sink in my house. After eating my food on my plate. And she's like, no, sit down. I got it. Sit down. And I'm like, no, I got it. She's like, no, please. I insist. And then her boyfriend is like, no, bro. Like, it's her job. Let her do it. I'm like,
what
the fuck?
Wow.
Like, and then she just took it and just kept going. And my wife, she didn't hear any of this because she was already in the kitchen. You know, she had finished, but...
Get out of my face with that shit.
I'm like, what? What? So, yeah.
Nope. No way, man. No, that shit does not...
Yeah, no, man.
That shit does not fly in my household. Like, not at all. Not at
all. Get out of here. Get out of here with that nonsense. We don't talk to them anymore for reasons that you know of that yeah. I'll share on a different...
It's literally episode. One of the most ridiculous stories I've ever heard.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any. That's like that is the very definition of petty. Like, it's like, what are you talking about? God, you're like, does the world completely revolve around you? Like, come on, let's take it fucking easy. All right, keep going.
So, last scene, Jerry and George still not gaining any ground with writing this script. And all of a sudden they're interrupted by Elaine. Elaine is pissed at Jerry because her company charged her like $429, for making long distance calls to Europe from work. Because after she was transferred, Elaine's former secretary dimed her out.
Right.
And Jerry was like, oh, no, I insist. I will pay this money? And Elena's like, oh, you don't have to. He's like, no, Elena. I said, and Elena, before he could finish the sentence, Elena's like, all right, takes the money.
Pulls a cockroach. And
as she leaves, she's like, she says, maybe I should go visit my mother. She just brought me some new panties and they're all laid out for me. revealing that Sandra did in fact dom out on Jerry.
It honestly is one of the best fucking episode endings, because she absolutely nails it. She nails the line perfectly. Look, again, that line is awful, man. Like, don't say that line, Jerry. Like, what are you doing? Like, that's a bad line. It is awful. So yeah, she absolutely nailed it. Anything else in this episode? I thought this was pretty great as well.
Yeah, it ended. It ended strong. Started off slow for me, but ended strong.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I love Susan's parents. They are so good, and that John Cheever's reveal is just like Jerry motioning to George, like, they got to get out of here, is one of my favorite parts. Just so funny. All right, that's it for us. We will be back next week for another episode of Airing of Grievances.
See ya.
Bye.
Really?